March, week 4, Monday. 1. Undying love and devotion. Reading. Inside the Russian embassy in London, a KGB colonel puffed a cigarette as he read the handwritten note for the third time. There was no need for the writer to express regret, he thought. Correcting this problem would be easy. He would do that in a moment. The thought of it caused a grim smile to appear and joy to his heart. But he pushed away those thoughts and turned his attention to a framed photograph on his desk. His wife was beautiful, he told himself as he remembered the day they were married. That was 43 years ago. And it had been the proudest and happiest day of his life. What had happened to all that time? Why had it passed so quickly? And why hadn't he spent more of it with her? Why hadn't he held her close and told her more often that he loved her? He cursed himself as a tear came from the corner of his eye, ran down his cheek, then dropped onto the note. He stiffened and wiped his face with the back of his hand. There was no need for remorse or regret, he told himself. In a few moments he would join her, and at that time would express his undying love and devotion. After setting the note ablaze, he dropped it into an ashtray and watched it burn. For a time, the names cast moving shadows on the walls of the darkened room. Then they nickered and died out. The colonel dropped the cigarette to the floor and ground it out with his heel, then clutched the photograph to his breast, removed a pistol from his pocket, placed the barrel in his mouth, and pulled the trigger. In the ashtray, a small portion of the note remained. Where it had been wetted by his tear, it had failed to burn, and on that scrap of paper were the words, "Died yesterday."
Tuesday, 2. Ugly baby. Reading. A woman got on a bus holding a baby. The bus driver said, "That's the ugliest baby I've ever seen." In a huff, the woman slammed her fare into the fare box and took an aisle seat near the rear of the bus. The man seated next to her sensed that she was agitated and asked her what was wrong. "The bus driver insulted me," she fumed. The man sympathized and said, "Why, he's a public servant and shouldn't say things to insult passengers." "You're right," she said. "I think I'll go back up there and give him a piece of my mind." "That's a good idea," the man said. "Here, let me hold your monkey."
Wednesday, 3. Is it worth it? Reading. Horror gripped the heart of the World War I soldier as he saw his lifelong friend fall in battle. Caught in a trench, with continuous gunfire whizzing over his head, the soldier asked his lieutenant if he might go out into the no man's land between the trenches to bring his fallen comrade back. "You can go," said the lieutenant, "but I don't think it will be worth it. Your friend is probably dead, and you may throw your life away." The lieutenant's words didn't matter, and the soldier went anyway. Miraculously, he managed to reach his friend, hoist him onto his shoulder, and bring him back to their company's trench. As the two of them tumbled in together to the bottom of the trench, the officer checked the wounded soldier, then looked kindly at his friend. I told you it wouldn't be worth it, he said. Your friend is dead, and you are mortally wounded. It was worth it, though, sir, said the soldier. How do you mean worth it? Responded the lieutenant. Your friend is dead. Yes, sir, the private answered. But it was worth it because when I got to him, he was still alive and had the satisfaction of hearing him say, Jim, I knew you'd come.
Thursday, 4. The Reward of Solitary Life, excerpted. Reading. Alone, one is never lonely. The spirit adventures, walking in a quiet garden, in a cool house, abiding single there. Loneliness is most acutely felt with other people, for with others, even with a lover sometimes, we suffer from our differences of taste, temperament, mood. Human intercourse often demands that we soften the edge of perception or withdraw at the very instant of personal truth for fear of hurting or of being inappropriately present, which is to say naked, in a social situation. Alone, we can afford to be wholly whatever we are and to feel whatever we feel absolutely. That is a great luxury. For me, the most interesting thing about a solitary life, and mine has been that for the last 20 years, is that it becomes increasingly rewarding. When I can wake up and watch the sun rise over the ocean, as I do most days, and know that I have an entire day ahead, uninterrupted, in which to write a few pages, take a walk with my dog, lie down in the afternoon for a long think. Why does one think better in a horizontal position? Read and listen to music. I am flooded with happiness. I am lonely only when I am overtired, when I have worked too long without a break, when, for the time being, I feel empty and need filling up. And I am lonely sometimes when I come back home after a lecture trip, when I have seen a lot of people and talked a lot, and am full to the brim with experience that needs to be sorted out. Then for a little while, the house feels huge and empty, and I wonder where myself is hiding. It has to be recaptured slowly, by watering the plants, perhaps, and looking again at each one as though it were a person, by feeding the two cats, by cooking a meal. It takes a while, as I watch the surf blowing up in fountains at the end of the field, but the moment comes when the world falls away, and the self emerges again from the deep unconsciousness, bringing back all I have recently experienced to be explored and slowly understood, when I can converse again with my hidden powers, and so grow, and so be renewed, till death do us part.
Friday, 5. Science and Art. Reading. I beg leave to thank you for the extremely kind and appreciative manner in which you have received the toast of science. It is the more grateful to me to hear that toast proposed in an assembly of this kind, because I have noticed of late years a great and growing tendency among those who were once jestingly said to have been born in a pre-scientific age to look upon science as an invading and aggressive force, which, if it had its own way, would oust from the universe all other pursuit. I think there are many persons who look upon this new birth of our times as a sort of monster rising out of the sea of modern thought with the purpose of devouring the Andromeda of art. And now and then, a Perseus, equipped with the shoes of swiftness of the ready writer, with a cap of invisibility of the editorial article, and it may be with the Medusa head of vituperation, shows himself ready to try conclusions with the scientific dragon. Sir, I hope that Persis will think better of it. First, for his own sake, because the creature is hard of head, strong of jaw, and for some time past has shown a great capacity for going over and through whatever comes in his way. And secondly, for the sake of justice. For I assure you, with my own personal knowledge, that if left alone, the creature is a very debonair and gentle monster. As for the Andromeda of art, he has the tenderest respect for that lady, and desires nothing more than to see her happily settled, and annually producing a flock of such charming children as those we see about us. But putting parables aside, I am unable to understand how anyone with a knowledge of mankind can imagine that the growth of science can threaten the development of art in any of its forms. If I understand the matter at all, science and art are the obverse and reverse of nature's metal, the one expressing the eternal order of things in terms of feeling, the other in terms of thought. When men no longer love nor hate, when suffering causes no pity, and the tale of great deeds ceases to thrill, when the lily of the field shall seem no longer more beautifully arrayed than Solomon in all his glory, and the awe has vanished from the snow-capped peak and deep ravine, then, indeed, science may have the world to itself. But it will not be because the monster has devoured art, but because one side of human nature is dead, and because men have lost the half of their ancient and present attributes.